From the Jackalope Studios, high above the city in the beautiful Barrie View Castle, welcome to the Harmony Health Hour, reconnecting spirit, mind, and body, with your host, Dr. Daryl Drumright.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. Drumright. It's Friday night at jackaloperadio.com. And the world's a crazy place out there, and we're going to try to put some peace into your minds. So tonight we're going to read verse number 75 and 76, then we're going to have a discussion about food tonight. It's barbecue grill season. It's get outside and cook some flesh. and we're going to talk about what is food, what's not food, and some of the selections that are sometimes controversial, but I'm going to have lots of cool science to tell you about some evidence behind my choices and what I recommend. Well, let's go ahead and get started up in here. Verse 75. Remember, last week, two weeks ago, we stopped with verse 74, was ruling by fear. And this is verse 75. Who can enjoy the treasures of life? Why are all the people so hungry? Because their grain is devoured by the rich in taxes. That is why the people are starving. Why are the people so rebellious? Because the government deprives them of their liberties and rights. That's why the people are rebellious. Why do the people not fear death? Because their lives are made so miserable that death seems no worse than life. Thus, no one can enjoy the treasures of life, neither the rich who squander their humanity, nor the government which tyrannizes the people, nor the people who have nothing to gain from life. And once again, I swear this was written today, not 2,400 years ago. The translation here follows the original very closely until the last stanza, which I believe successive translators must have altered to mystify the entire point. Basically, what he's saying here is that the system, you have to go back to the great integrity. For example, provides character by character translation of the last stanza. For those who do not use their life to act are able to value life. Clearly, what this verse asks and answers is why people are starving, rebellious, and do not fear death. My departure from the last line extent Chinese text is to avoid its irrelevance to the rest of the verse. And that's Dr. Dale. I can think he kind of cut himself short on this particular one. I like this verse a lot because it has a lot to do with the interaction between the need for rules and the lack or the leap from that to rulers. In America, we believe in freedom and individual rights, and you have to have rules, and you have to have
most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we believe that. Whether we actually follow that is another thing. But you got to have rules because rules create stability and a place for you to grow in and be safe and comfortable. But you don't need rulers, people that come in and arbitrarily change things around. That's called tyranny, and tyranny always leads to rebellion, and you get this vicious cycle. Maybe in the age of the great integrity we're living in now, with our internet and our communication devices, we can leap out of this vicious cycle and start realizing that people individually can live with honor with themselves and live by rules and not have rulers lording over them.
Gotcha.
Okay. Verse 76. We're getting towards the end of this. There's only 81 verses.
Wow.
We started reading this in, what, September of last year?
Yeah, earlier than that. Maybe it was September. I thought it was August. But
August. So it's about 1 year to go through this whole cycle.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Verse 76, let yen predominate over yang. If you remember, yen is the source energy, the female energy. Yang is the expression, the fire, the male energy over the top. When we are born, we are soft and supple. But when we perished, there's no more tenderness to be cherished. When plants are young, they are pliant and fragile. When they die, as they lose their green, they wither and dry. The sharp sword and knife triest always with death, while love without strife is an ever-devoted disciple of life. An inflexible army seals its own fate. When a tree branch grows brittle, it easily snaps, whether long or little. Wherever you go, the rigid lie low, while the weightless in the sky, and all that is gentle, fly boundless and high. Commentary. This verse, like verses 3, 42, 45, and 78, elucidates the Chinese law of opposites, yin and yang, soft and hard, accepting and blaming, peace and war, harmony and antagonism. The verse is a gentle metaphoric knock on the door of our consciousness, implying that hardness, inflexibility, war, and coercion are not the nature of reality, but just the nature of our current social reality. Instead, we can make our lives peaceful, gentle, loving, and flexible. This verse also suggests that every extreme eventually turns into its opposite. Yin turns into yang, and yang into yin. The entire evolution of species may be seen as five enormous evolutionary transformations. 1. From our yang origins of life in the sea as a single-celled amoeba-like creature, to 2. The arising of yin plants always rooted somewhere, to 3. The transformation to complex yang sea fishes and then land animals, to 4. The development of more yin human beings living in communal clans and then tribes and more or less in harmony with nature, and 5. The birth of yang human beings in fiercely competitive groups, cities, states, countries, religions, ethnocentricities, egocentricities, and all manners of hostilities and animosities. If we are going to survive the extreme forms of violence that we have now coupled with extremely high developments of technology, we need to enter our next, and probably for us human beings, our final evolutionary transformation as a planetary, totally cooperative species who once more harmonizes with nature, with each other, and within ourselves. However, our transformation to the yin great integrity will be on a conscious and therefore much higher level than any form of life has ever experienced before. The prophetic wisdom of Lao Tzu relentlessly focuses on the shift in dominance from yang to yin, aggressive to yielding, from hard to soft, from war to peace, from hating to loving, and from hostile aggressive nations to a great universal integrity. How unbelievable that it has taken us all these 27 centuries to make this theory, Tao, and practice Te, our guidebook Qing, to the first evolutionary leap that has ever been possible to effectuate consciously. Thank you, Lao Tzu, for creating our guide to the theory and practice of the Great Integrity. If we follow it, all future generations will honor you and us. However, if we fail to create an alternative humane consciousness and the appropriate social, economic, and cultural institutions to nurture our new incredible technologies, there might not be any generations of the future to honor either you or us.
Powerful stuff.
Powerful stuff. I mean, he's you can tell he's coming to the end of this with only 81 verses. There's just a few verses left we'll cover in the next couple of weeks. We've got two opposites processes, appearance and reality, the toxicity of blame, transforming our lives, and then the last one is the paradox of life.
Man.
So those are the things we have to finish up here. And you can see he's coming to these conclusions here. He's starting to wrap it all together that from the beginning, the source yin as it grows up through and we've transformed back and forth through our history, through our understanding of not only our history, but history of life on planet Earth, that I love, say Dr. Dale wrote this in the 1990s. So he's still, and that's 10, 12 years ago now, we see even more advancement and you see this great conflict of good versus evil that's coming to a crescendo right now on a global scale. You see the consolidation of power in an attempt to control and harness humanity and all of Earth and dominate the Earth. But then you're seeing the native cultures spring forward around the planet, standing up and rising up and saying, we want freedom. We want expression. We want the ability to interact, but not be told how to interact. So there's this great paradox between, and I talk about the office all the time, between the individual and being part of the collective, that each human being has to come with grips to the reality that he is both. You are both an individual, unique, separate, and distinct entity, consciousness, point of view on the reality around you, but you're also within the great integrity of the universal truths that you find yourself in.
Well, isn't it also true that this was a lifetime worth of writing? This wasn't like he sat down and wrote this in a year. I mean, this was something that you can actually see an evolution, because during the time he was writing this, in his lifetime, the entire culture was changing in China constantly. Mm-hmm. It was evolving, and there was new power and old power coming, going, and a lot of weird things were going on at that time.
He was living during the time of the Great Consolidation, where the seven tribes of China were consolidated into a single nation.
Right.
The Great Qin Dynasty was created at that time. So a lot of politics, a lot of give and take, a lot of princedoms and elite interactions going on, and then a lot of rebellious uprisings coming from the grass up. The pitchfork type stuff was going on as well. There's an ancient, a long-standing tradition in China that when the emperor is doing the right thing, if it's a good emperor, then the people will thrive. If the emperor is not good, then the people will suffer. And so the people can look to their own existence, and they reflect that directly back onto the emperor. So if the people are starving and suffering, then it's his fault. And it's their job to go remove him and put somebody else in there that might be more magnanimous, more into the great integrity and understanding that the king and the land are one, from the Excalibur. Kind of the same philosophy, that if the king is healthy in the mind, then he's going to do princely things, and the land and the people will thrive. If the king is unhealthy or diseased in mind or has bitten the apple of greed, then he will do selfish things and lead down the path of darkness, and the people will suffer from that.
True. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And it comes right up to the 21st century, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. That's the thing, though. With a philosophy as strong as this, and as thought through and felt through the soul, and I feel the connection to the universe,
mm-hmm.
I think that it's a timeless thing. And unfortunately, as human beings, we seem to keep repeating patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, it's going to be, you know, even more so very relevant today because of the patterns that we continue to evolve through. And it's funny because as our evolution goes as a species, we keep, instead of looking back and learning,
mm-hmm.
it seems like we keep going back through the same things. It's like, wow, did we really like it the first time so much we had to make a bunch of sequels that were the exact same way?
Well, it's not learning then, because the universe will present you the same lesson over and over again until you get it.
Right. And apparently we can't.
Yeah, we're not stepping up to it. But you also notice it's going faster, though.
It is.
The cycle it does pick up pace. If you go back 500 years or 1,500 years, these cycles would take, you know, 100 years to run through, and now they take 100 days to run through.
Well, it's like Pac-Man. You know, when you first started playing it, it took you forever, but once you figured out the pattern, you kind of zip through.
Right, right. Yep, so that's where we're at today. We're on a high-speed, high-acceleration version of the same old story. And I hope that we can break through the top of this thing. And the only way to do that, in my opinion, is each one of us understanding the paradox and steps up to the plate to take responsibility for your own dang self.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you need help, ask for it. But don't demand it. Okay.
That's right.
Go be productive. And I was thinking today, we've got to move our minds from what can I get out of this to become producer beings, because we're being told by our culture and society that we're even, and I cringe, we're called consumers.
Right.
We are the great consumer horde. Our job is just to consume. Like you said, Pac-Man. You know, we just run around eating the dots without thinking about where the dots came from, without thinking about anything like that. We're just supposed to eat it because it's put in front of us, and shut up and just keep eating. The only way out of this is the consumer class reintroduce or relearn to be producer classes, to make little widgets, to grow a garden, to do something that in your own soul you feel productive, that you've actually done something. And another thing that needs to happen, Todd, and this is hard, is all the people in their cubicles out there that don't really know what the end product of what they're participating in, they need to back off a second and look at that company they're working for, or the government they're working for, or wherever they're putting their labor into, and look at the end product. What are they actually participating in production? I know that their little step is cubicleized and compartmentalized, so they don't know what the end product is. So they can read their manual, and it looks like they're doing something cool, look like they're helping. But until you can back off a couple, two or three paces, and see the big picture of what's the end product of your efforts, you are participating in exchange for a paycheck into something that may be enslaving someone else.
Yeah.
It may be stealing from somebody else's productivity. And it's definitely a lot of people in the service industries and government industries, if they look at what they're doing, it's very hard on them. And I had somebody the other day as an accountant. You know, what do you do? Well, I count stuff. Well, whose stuff do you count? Well, somebody else's stuff. So wouldn't it be more fun if you got to count your stuff? And she's like, yeah, that would be a lot more fun, you know? But the point is, we've got millions of people that really produce nothing.
Yeah.
They just count stuff and they keep track of stuff. And why do you keep track of stuff? Well, so somebody else can take it. It's not really for if you're a producing being and you're going about your life being productive, then counting your stuff is not really that important to you because you're involved in enjoying the complete act of creation and producing.
Right.
And then once you produce it, the most honorable and the most fulfilling heart thing you can do with it is give it away.
Exactly.
You know, produce more. You become confident in yourself because you've been productive and you can see the fruits of your labor. You see what you've produced and then you share it with others and go make more. So you're fulfilled on multiple levels because you're being productive. You're happy because your hands are busy doing something. And then you share it with others and you see the smiles on their face from you sharing it. So your heart's happy then again. And then the whole society moves to this abundant mentality of producer beings versus this lack mentality of what's in it for me and how much can I hoard and how much can I take before somebody takes it from me.
Right.
Whereas where we have been most of our lives and been kind of hoarded or guided down that path.
Right. By everything, really.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much sickness in our current culture, you know. You can go in all kinds of different directions.
Yeah. Yeah. Branch it out. Yeah, whenever you're ready to.
All right, well, let's take our first break here, and then we'll come back and we'll kind of delve into some food patterns and some things that I can teach you about what is food and what isn't food. This is Dr. Jerome Wright, the Harmony Health Hour, coming to you from Jackalope Radio. Happy Friday. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Dr. Daryl Drumright and the Harmony Health Hour on Jackalope Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Dr. Drumright, segment number two of the Harmony Health Hour.
I got a question for you, Doc.
Oh, okay.
When was it and why was it that it just hit you that you had to be the chiropractor you are, you had to go down this path to make other people well and healthy, and what was it that just hit you in your life?
You know, that is the funny thing is, when I was 5 years old, I was living with a motorcycle gang, basically. It was a pretty wild childhood. It wasn't very safe, a secure place. And my grandmother died of cancer.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Well, and that I was, you know, a straight-A student even in this chaos world that I was living in. And I told my family and friends that someday I was going to be a doctor. And at first I wanted to cure cancer. And then I turned to wanting to be a brain surgeon. But by the time I was in high school, I was in a rock band, and I was going to play guitar on my way through college, you know. So, I was very big on ambition. I didn't have any kind of guidepost or anything like that because my father passed away when I was 14. So, I was left to my own accord to come up with my own path. And I didn't really have any kind of challenges that were hard. Everything I did was easy. I mean, as far as knowledge and education and stuff. And I mean, I can bring Paige in here and talk about my high school years and how I was the guy with the engineer boots and the black concert t-shirts and long hair, yet I was in the calculus class and the math analysis and I was number four on the chess board and this kind of weird dichotomy that went on. I went to college, to med school. I didn't even hear about chiropractic at this time in my life. Got into a fraternity, learned all kinds of things I probably shouldn't have learned. And in the meantime, my best friend went to chiropractic school, and I started arguing with him about, you know, why don't you become a real doctor, you know, you know, come to me with the medical school. And he went to chiropractic school because when he was 16 years old, he was in a car accident and broke his neck in three places. And the medics wanted to put cervical braces on him and a halo and fuse his neck. And he went to a chiropractor and totally fixed the problem in a matter of a couple months and changed his life. Still not convinced about chiropractic at the time. My grades weren't doing so good. I was too much partying in the fraternity, you know, and just kind of wild times experience in life. I joined the Army, went off and was an 82nd Airborne paratrooper for a while. That's when I started reevaluating things and grew up a little bit. And talking to my friend again, I asked him a simple question because I was having a hard time in medical school because the professors, you know, with my background in mathematics and intelligence and my self-confidence that I had to find my own way through, I always ask a lot of questions. So I'd go to the medical professors and they'd say, if this happens, do this. And I'd say, why? And they'd look at me like, what?
Why are you asking why?
What do you mean why? You know, they would say things like, kid, you're too busy to be thinking about like that. Just do what we tell you and you'll figure it out later. Just get busy and do this. And they tell you things like, don't hang out with the other kids in the college because you're a medical student and they're not. So you're a different class. You got to hang out with us over here. You know, and I didn't fit into that class at all. I mean, it wasn't my thing. And then after I was in the military, I asked my friend Paige, well, why? What is it about chiropractic that you like? And he told me very basically is that the power that made the body is the only power that can heal the body. That health comes from above, down, and inside out, which is the basic premise of chiropractic. This made really good sense, but I still didn't really believe it. I remember my first day in chiropractic school. When I got out of the military, I took my credits and moved over to chiropractic school. And I stood up in front of the class because Carl Cleveland asks everybody there, why are you here? This guy's father's a chiropractor. This guy, chiropractic saved his life. This guy, this kind of stuff. Come on. And I stood up and I told him, it's like, okay, I'm here to scientifically disprove chiropractic. And he laughed at me. He goes, good, I'm glad you're here. And so from that point, I started questioning why constantly. And the chiropractors always had the reason why, everything that they did. Yeah. And so from that point to this, I still am a skeptic. I'll always be a skeptic. And I always ask why. And chiropractic and acupuncture and the stuff I do is has proof. There's a background to it. There is a why. And after 20 years of doing it, I can tell you with great sincerity that the greatest truth I've ever come across is that the health of your spine is absolutely critical to the overall well-being of all aspects of your body. So it's a truth that I can't hurt anybody, and yet I can help people with my hands. It's the most fulfilling thing that you could possibly imagine.
Well, there you go. Wow.
Except maybe preparing food for people.
And talking about preparing food, we have a special guest here. Yes,
that's right. We just did fresh in the studio is our friend Christian from the Fazenda Brazilian Grill, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome, awesome. So we were just talking about me being a chiropractor and how it's very fulfilling for me to use my hands to help other people. And I think we're probably the only other place that really you can help other people with your hands in such a good way is preparing food. I mean, my oldest son, he's 9 years old, and he has a desire to be a cook. And I'm like, go for it, man. You know, cooks are awesome because everybody has to eat. So you want to get people happy. You want to get into people's heart, man. Make some cool food for them.
No, definitely. I've been in the restaurant business for about 10 years now. And cook is a passion, you know, I used to be a professional volleyball player,
mm-hmm.
and now I substituted this for cooking.
Mm.
You know, this is my therapy, I would say. When I need something, when I need some time, something that fill in what I need from, you know, to feel good, I go back in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
And do my thing.
Now, I put myself through college cooking. I was a cook at Chi-Chi's. I was a cook at IHOP. I cooked at Bennigan's.
Oh, no, that's a little different, though. Than
oh, yeah, I know, but it's still. A little bit. I mean, you're putting your hands together, sure, and you're throwing stuff up and doing prep work and things like that. So I've never been down to your restaurant. I guess Todd has. Tell us about it. I mean, what's going on down there?
Well, as a Brazilian cuisine, it's the everyday lunch and dinner in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved to Kansas City, I opened other style of Brazilian restaurant, which is more high-end, a little bit more expensive, is all-you-can-eat kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized really soon that there's not what U.S. needs right now, especially in this tough economic situation right now.
Right.
Well, I'm from São Paulo, 23 million people in Brazil.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of a place like Fazenda.
Right.
Every single corner of the city. This is the way you eat every day.
Right.
You
know? So, now, Brazil's booming right now, right?
Yeah.
You know, I've got some other friends from Brazil, and their economy, they're just like...
Everything's about Brazil now. Yeah. I have the Brazilian channel at home.
Mm-hmm.
Every night, I watch the news and see how things are going, and just going crazy. Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah.
You know, I think last week, they just found some more oil.
All right.
Yeah. So, I think besides the Middle East,
yeah,
now we are the biggest provider
of oil. Excellent.
So the economy is doing really well. We have the World Cup coming in 2014.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Now that I've been to World Cup before. That is some crazy stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, not all good either. I mean, some of those soccer fans are a little nuts.
Yeah, I'm gonna go really bad, but I'm kind of afraid too, just to see, especially Brazilians. We are crazy about soccer.
Oh yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
I don't know how they're gonna work out in there. And I also have the Olympic Games in 2016 as well.
Wow, you guys are just booming down there. That's I want to get back into the food and kind of stuff and how the Brazilians eat versus the way we eat up here. But one other thing I wanted to just fresh off the news. Did you see that they just discovered a new indigenous tribe in the jungles?
Yes, I saw this. That's crazy.
They have never been in contact. They were shooting bows and arrows at the airplane as it's flying overhead. And then we got all these American liberals saying, oh, we need to go save them. I'm like, save them from what? They look pretty cool. I mean,
save them from us, actually.
Save them from us, yeah. Leave them alone.
That's right.
So let's get into a little more because the Brazilians, they eat different than we eat up here?
Yes, we do.
Okay, give me some details of what you found up here, the way we eat versus what you're more familiar with. And I understand you're trying to provide us with this.
Sure. Well, I noticed that quantity
mm-hmm.
is pretty much the difference.
Quantity, how much?
How much you put in your plate.
Right.
You know, that goes along how to live your life. You know, I see... Let me go back there.
Sure.
In Brazil, we walk a lot.
Right.
We go everywhere by foot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't get in a car or so. So I learned that over here, you gotta have a car. Right. Everyone drives everywhere. And
we've kind of set up our structure of our infrastructure, so you have to drive.
Exactly.
You know, there's no sidewalks to walk on. You know, and everything's so far away, especially here in Kansas City. Yep. You know,
almost impossible to not have a car here, right?
Yep.
And that goes along with the way you live your life, you know. And I think the way you eat is more, I wouldn't say healthier, mm-hmm. but that's what I try to do. We eat a little bit more conscious. Mm-hmm. Is the right word to say that?
Well, you think about what you're eating.
Exactly. And then Fazenda, we give option for you. I used to say it's a steakhouse, but perfect for vegetarians
mm-hmm.
because you pay by the weight.
Okay.
So no matter what you put in your plate is how you pay for.
Okay. So if you're eating a lot of the leafy vegetables and stuff, it doesn't weigh much. So you get a bulk.
Exactly. You get a nice plate for, you know, $6 to $8, $10.
Mm-hmm.
And you're hungry if you're a carnivore.
You're carnivorous? Yeah.
Carnivorous.
Eat meat.
Up to $18, $15, depending how much you put in your plate. You
know? Right.
So that can.
So is it like a buffet? I mean, you just kind of go through and you pick out what you need?
Yeah, we have three stations. The first mm-hmm. station is just the cold salads.
Mm-hmm.
You help yourself. The second one are the hot dishes
mm-hmm.
With traditional Brazilian rice, beans, stroganoff,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, is my mother's recipe. Right, Todd?
It is. As a matter of fact, I put that on Dr. D's notes. I said, talk to him about his mother's recipes. They're amazing.
Yeah. Is your mother up here with you? No.
She was here a little bit before we opened the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I make sure she sit down with my chef, even though my chef is great. You know, he knows a lot about Brazilian cuisine.
Right.
And they sit down together, say, Mom, make some rice.
Right.
Mom, make some beans.
Show him how you're doing
and
it.
Just the way we do, because I want to keep the flavor, you know, that we have in Brazil.
You have any problem finding the spices and stuff up here?
No, it's pretty common. Well, our culinary is basically garlic and vegetable oil and onion.
Well,
Nothing.
I like all that.
You know, yeah.
All good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, all good stuff. Exactly. And then the third station is the meat station.
Mm-hmm.
So you help yourself with the salads. You help yourself with the hot dishes. And the third station is the meat station that we offer about 8 different cuts of meat.
Mm-hmm.
3 red meats, 2 sausages, and 2 chicken.
Excellent.
And you stop by and you just tell the guy what you want. And he carved, you know, the huge skewers of meat.
Right.
Just carved the meat in your plate.
Right.
After that, we just weigh your plate, get your beverage, your dessert.
Excellent.
So, the desserts are also his mother's and his grandma's.
Which is a passion fruit mousse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, passion fruit is a really typical fruit in Brazil, mm-hmm. really healthy. It's funny because passion fruit, actually in Brazil, it's used for a lot of medicine purpose.
Mm-hmm. You know,
because we have this thing that passion fruit calms you down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's even a joke in there. If you're stressed out or so, say, hey, go drink some passion fruit.
And it calms you down. It's got a sedative kind of thing. Opposite of the caffeine that we're so addicted to around here.
Exactly.
Now, you guys in Brazil, you have access to all the beans and the coffees and all that kind of stuff, too.
I think it's the second or third best coffee in the world. You know?
Yeah. Wow.
And I think the first one is Colombia.
Colombia.
And then. Oh my God, where's that one over here?
Ecuador, Peru.
Peru, and then Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's huge, in there. We also have this drink called Guaraná.
Mm-hmm.
It was a.
And you have this at the restaurant?
Yes, it's a soda. Uh-huh. It's a typical soda in Brazil, but tastes like ginger ale.
Okay.
And the Guaraná itself is a fruit that is the main ingredient for Red Bull.
Oh, okay. Guaraná.
Yeah, we call Guaraná here.
Okay.
Guaraná for us.
Yeah, that'll give you a buzz.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like I say, I used to play volleyball. I mean, before I go to games in Brazil, I used to drink 2 or 3 Guaranás.
Yeah. Shaking. You're ready to roll.
Ready to roll. Let's play.
That's
a natural way to, you know, keep up with that.
So everything that you've got down there is and here's what I teach my patients and people around here about food. Real simple. I try to keep everything, just keep it simple around here. And so when people ask me about food, this is basically what I tell them, is if it was alive recently and you can recognize what it was when it was alive, then you can eat it and it's going to be good for you. But if it's granular and processed and comes in a box and comes someplace and you look at it and you can't even recognize what it was,
sure,
that's not food. We call that a drug, okay?
Okay.
Like the sugar. It gives you a nice buzz.
Sure.
But it's not food. And just like the Guaraná drink, you know, I mean, that's not food.
Yeah.
Okay? It's fun. I mean, it's nothing.
It's processed, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's processed. And it has certainly effects on you, which I have nothing against that. But I do have a lot of problems with Americans who call sugar and processed chemicals and stuff like that. They call that food. And it's really not.
Yeah.
Okay? Because food, to me, has to have been a lie. There has to be some essence, what the Chinese call qi, living organization within the construct, within the buildup of what it is you're chewing on.
Definitely. That goes really along with what you offer,
mm-hmm.
because we do everything from scratch.
Right.
You know, we buy, you know, local, most of the items that we have. And we gather every day, 7 in the morning, and prep. It's how you do it, prep every day. So you don't have anything out of the can, go open there, go eat this.
No. Right.
Every day, chop it up and clean it and made in house.
You get to go down to the river market and get your produce?
No, we just don't have time to do that, actually.
Right.
You know,
because somebody drops it by.
Yeah, we have a local company that we place 2 or 3 orders a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we don't keep anything in stock for more than 2 days.
Excellent.
So the food comes in, go out. Comes in, goes out.
And see, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Fresh.
So, exactly.
The fresher it is, the better it is.
We don't have any preservatives.
Right.
Is that right?
That's the word, yeah.
Yeah. So a lot
artificial colors, artificial flavors, all that stuff.
Even our meat, which is, people keep asking us, how you marinate this meat? What do you do with this meat that tastes so great?
Mm-hmm.
Well, sea salt.
Sea salt.
Nothing else. So we carve the meat in a plate.
Mm-hmm.
Before we put it back in the grill, we put sea salt on top and put it back in there.
So when you shave off a piece, you grill it a little bit more?
Yeah. Well, because we got 10 people in line.
Right.
The first two want a medium rare.
Right.
And the other one with a well done.
Right. Let's shoe leather
it. So for kind of piece of meat, we have 2 or 3 skewers of that meat.
Right.
With different temperature.
Right.
You know? And we carve just the outside
right.
of the cut, of the steak. And you always get the fresh part, the next cut.
Right.
You know, so we just cut it off, put it salt, put it back in the grill, a couple of seconds, a minute. You don't know, not the temperature for the next customer.
Right, right.
So
now, I wanted to, I was doing some stuff, and I'm gonna give you this at the end of the show here. I did some research before the show about something that I've promoted for diabetics. And Todd, you're perfect. Learning about this, is a high protein diet since the 1970s. Atkins is one of the ones that did some of the first research on this. A high fat, high protein, low carbohydrate diet, and I'm going to read a couple of these things off to you, is very effective at a weight loss program. I don't know if you knew anything about
yes.
that or not. Let me read some of these studies real quick. This is a study out of the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine and the University of Colorado Health Science Center and Washington University School of Medicine. Randomly assigned participants to either a low-carbohydrate, high-protein, high-fat diet or a low-calorie, high-carbohydrate, low-fat diet. The findings were the low-carbohydrate diet produced a greater weight loss and was associated with greater improvements in some risk factors for coronary heart disease. Another study from the University of Cincinnati instructed obese women to follow either a low-fat, calorie-restricted diet or a low-carbohydrate diet for 6 months. The women lost significantly more weight and body fat on the low-carbohydrate diet than the women instructed on the low-fat diet at 3 and 6 months. Additionally, blood pressure, triglycerides, cholesterol, fasting blood sugar, and insulin all improved.
Hmm.
And this is in women. Now, we can go down even farther. Study from the University of Cincinnati assigned obese, healthy women to follow either a low-carbohydrate diet for 4 months. Both groups were given nutritional counseling or instructed in record energy expenditures using a pedometer, which tells you how many steps you take.
Okay.
The women on a low-carbohydrate diet lost significantly more weight, even though there was no difference in calorie intake or energy expenditure. Same exercise, same level of calories, just a different combination of foods.
Perfect.
The ones on the low-carbohydrate diet lost significantly more weight, supporting the metabolic advantage phenomenon of controlling carbohydrate nutrition. Now, why is this? Why does that happen? The body produces enzymes. When you put food in your mouth, the body recognizes what that is, and then the pancreas and the different parts of the body produce enzymes to break that particular thing down. So if you're giving the body just carbohydrates, your body's not made out of carbohydrates, okay?
Sure.
So you build an enzyme pathway to use carbohydrates as energy, and then if there's any fats mixed up in there, it just stores it. It just shoves it away and for later use, and you get fat because of it. But if you don't give the body the carbohydrates, and you just give it the fats and the proteins, then the enzyme pathways of the digestion build up these particular proteases and lipases that break down proteins and fats to use that as energy. And then when the food's gone, those enzymes are still around. And those enzymes will break down the fats that you have stored in your body.
Sure.
So you're literally, and there's more complicated, it's called ketosis. You're forcing the body to go down a metabolic pathway that lowers blood sugars throughout the body and actually stabilizes the insulin, so you don't get this spike and drop that causes weight gain and causes diabetes. By staying away from the processed foods and the simple carbohydrates, you're actually forcing the body to stabilize itself and use its own fats as an energy source when you don't have food in the belly.
I have a question for you about that.
Sure.
When does the exercise kicks in? For example, we always, you know, I exercise my whole life.
Well, right.
Not much lately, as you can see. But
you're getting our habits here.
Oh,
man.
My God. In the past, you know, my life was 8 hours a day just exercising. Mm-hmm. And when that kicks in, when is the, how can you find out, is it difference for you and me? Like when you started burning the fat that I have saved or so?
Right, right. And that is about 15 to 20 minutes of cardiovascular exercise where the heart rate's running about 120 beats a minute. The muscles and the liver of your body store glycogen. Okay, it's a form of sugar that your body keeps around as a background storage. So when you begin the exercise, your body starts burning off the glycogen. The blood starts carrying the glycogen, this particular type of sugar, into the cells so that they can use that as energy. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes for it to run out of glycogen. And when it runs out of glycogen and the body stores in the blood and in the muscles usable stuff goes away, then the cells' metabolism switches over to aerobic burn. You've heard of aerobic exercise. You have anaerobic burn, which is using sugars and glycogen for energy, and aerobic burn, which uses pure oxygen.
Sure.
You're literally oxidizing the cell itself when you go into this aerobic burn. So when you're exercising on a daily basis, it takes about 20 minutes to get up into burning off the standard supplies of glycogen your body has, and then it switches over into aerobic burn, and it starts using proteins and other things and starts actually just running on pure oxygen. Now, this is the critical factor of this, is after you've gone into the aerobic burn, it's very important to not eat anything for a couple hours after exercise, because what'll happen is if you don't put fresh calories in, especially carbohydrates, for the body to quickly turn into glycogen and replenish itself, it'll force it to kick in the proteases and the enzymes to break fat and protein down that's already in your body and turn that into the glycogen. Because it's important for your body to keep a glycogen store for emergencies. And the liver fills up and the muscles fill up. So if your nutrition, your diet is, if you exercise and you've switched over to aerobic burn, you've burned off all the glycogen stores, the body will immediately start trying to build that back up as soon as you calm down and stop exercising. So it's important to not consume anything to let it use that, because it will. It'll just break that down and use that quickly to fill the blood back up and force it to go into ketosis and start breaking down the fats and replenish its glycogen, which is a sugar. It'll convert fats into sugar.
Okay.
And use the body stores to replenish itself.
So the jogging that I do once or twice a week, the 20 minutes jogging.
20 minutes.
So.
But you got to watch your heartbeat. You know, you're not just goofing off.
Just by the minute. It's not just by the time.
Yeah, it's got to. You want about 120 to 150 beats a minute. The heart tells you that you're actually strenuously burning off these calories.
So once you're up to
120.
120, you start burning, basically.
Yeah. It'll definitely kick it in right there. But then you got to sustain that for 15 to 20 minutes.
Sure.
Now, anything over 20 minutes, if you're training for a marathon or something, useful. But if you're just doing this for maintenance and weight balance, you don't need more than 20 minutes. Okay? 20 minutes, the glycogen stores are gone. Your body switches. You've seen people get their second wind kind of thing. When you're running, you know, you get all, and then all of a sudden you're kind of brisk again. Yeah. That's when that switch occurs. You switch over to burning just oxygen. And once you go through that switch at about 15 to 20 minutes, you're done. Okay. You go stretch out. What I teach around here is there's three phases to exercise. You have to strengthen, you have to stretch, and you have to burn, cardio burn. And you have to do all three every day. Okay. Especially as you get older.
Okay. Yeah, for me, it's working in another direction. I'm getting older and getting
lazy
or so.
It's about priorities, you know. You just got to make yourself important, buddy. You know,
I did it for so long, you know, like playing volleyball, and it was just so much every day that once I'm done, I was like, all right, I need to a break.
Yeah.
But now I see the results in my body. I can see right now the fact that, you know, because I eat so much sugar every day. I own this amazing restaurant with all the healthy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I,
you got it right in front of you.
Right in front of me every day. I was like,
you run down a Quick Trip and get it.
I was like, no, I'll go to, I'm going to dessert today. Just meat today. You know, I know that I need to.
So another thing I can help you with is, with all the wonderful food you have, it's important to also realize you don't want to mix the carbs with the fats and the proteins in the same meal.
Okay.
If you have the carbohydrates, the pastas and stuff like that, at the same time that you have the fats and protein, your body will use the carbohydrates as a quick build for the glycogen stores, and then it doesn't need the proteins and the fats, so it stores them. It just puts them off into the fat and in the
liposuction.
You get fat real fast when you mix. Okay.
I see now.
So if you're going to eat the salads and the carbohydrates, just eat the salads and carbohydrates in that meal.
Okay.
And stay away from the fats and proteins. And then the other meals where you eat the fats and proteins, don't eat the carbohydrates along with them. Just eat the fats and proteins. So where Americans get in trouble, it's not the steak. The steak's actually, if you just eat the steak, you can reverse diabetes and do really well with that. It's the steak and potatoes.
I see.
Okay. So when you put the two together, the potatoes go right to your energy.
The mashed potatoes?
Yeah, the mashed potatoes.
Yeah, my daughter.
She loves it.
Oh, yeah.
She's a mashed potato fiend.
Yeah. So, yeah, eat all the mashed potatoes you want, but don't eat the steak.
Right, at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So we got to start splitting that up a little bit because we've got this tradition of the steak and potatoes. And as you've learned, walk around Kansas City, you see what that does to us.
Yep. I have to tell you, though, he has a dish, the official dish of Brazil. It's a beans and pork.
Yeah.
My God, I had 3 pounds of it last night because I loved it. So that's what I love there. And I get that he's got two different types of rice there. One's just white rice and the other is the special rice. It's kind of it's got meat in it and some vegetables in it. And I mixed those and then I put on my beans and that's all I ate last night. So I was okay because I didn't really mix too much meat in there. I just mainly had beans and rice.
Well, yeah, beans is considered a protein though. It's got a lot of protein in it.
Oh, so that's okay.
Yeah, the beans go with the meats.
Okay.
Not with the rice.
Well, damn it. I can't have one without the other.
You see, actually in Brazil, it's funny because the combination of rice and beans is the lunch and dinner every day of the Brazilians.
You can live on that.
You know, and it was funny because my mom keep calling me every once in a while. So, what have for lunch today? So, I run in and have some Subway. No, you gotta have some real meat. You have some real food.
Get some real food.
You gotta have rice.
Don't ever have Subway. You've got the best meat in the city sitting right in front of you. Subway's like sitting out all day and they got flies landing on the cheese.
But it won't rot in even then. You know, you can leave it out all day and it just sits there.
It's got that rainbow color. It's nasty. Yeah, you don't want that. Stay away.
Anyway, just like the rice and meat is so common in Brazil. And I would say one of the specialties. It's funny because we have so many other expensive items, like the meat, for example.
Right.
And everyone say something about our rice and beans.
No, I was thinking about the meat. Do you use Brazilian meat up here, or you just use the American meat?
American meat.
Because I know when I've traveled internationally and stuff, the American meat is bland. I mean, it's very...
not at their place, though.
Yeah. Well,
we have a special cut for us, because we do a lot of cuts with the top sirloin, and the cut that we call picanha, which is the most traditional cut in Brazil, is a cap of the top sirloin.
Mm.
And in the U.S., they don't use that cut for anything.
So that's because it's too gamey?
It's just a part of the cow that don't use it. They cut different. They use it, but they cut different.
All right.
So by cut different, you have another flavor from the meat.
I have learned that recently. Yeah. The way you cut the meat makes
the meat
a huge difference in its tenderness and its flavor.
Even though the way we put in the skewer, we have all the process, how to put in the skewer together, how to put the salt on.
Wow.
What kind of side of the meat you're going to cut first? You know, we have this thing in Brazil. The first cut of the picanha is the best meat, better than filet mignon.
All right.
All
right. Well, it sounds awesome. I've got to get down there and try this because, I mean, I love good food.
I think we should go Wednesday this week.
You want to go Wednesday?
1 o'clock. Lunch? I can be up here by 1 o'clock, see?
Okay.
I'll be there.
We should do that.
So we're doing lunch Wednesday?
There you go.
Perfect. Hey, I want to thank you for coming on here. So you got anything? Do you have a website or anything like that?
Yes, we do. Our website is www.fazendagrill.com.
Fazenda is FAZENDA.
Yes.
Grill, GRILL.
Exactly.
.com.
We are on Facebook as well.
Uh-huh.
We're on Twitter. We have an email list. People sign up for emails. We send them once a week email with their specials.
Like coupons, stuff like that?
Yeah. We're trying to get away with the coupon.
Uh-huh.
The reason is because we are a lower price.
Right.
You know, and
your margins just margins too tight for that.
Margins is tied up, and then we try to show Kansas City that you can eat healthy and have a great meal at $10, $12 per person average.
Excellent.
Which is, you know, is the plate average is between $10 to $13.
Well, you're right in my range because I eat a lot of Thai food and, sure. and, you know, around here, and that's what it's going to be is about $10 to $12 for a decent plate of food.
We charge $8.49 a pound, and then depends how much you put in a plate.
What you're putting in, how dense it is. Awesome. Sure. Okay, well, Christian, thank you very much for coming by today. You know, I can't wait to come down and try the food. I mean, it sounds like you know what you're doing. I mean, you got a good attitude about this, and welcome to Kansas City.
Thank you.
Don't pick up our habits, man. Bring your habits up here and show us how to do it right.
I'm trying. But, you know, I love this place, too. I've been here for, you know, 10 years, and I don't want to go back.
Yep.
I mean, even though I love Brazil, don't take me wrong, but Kansas City is awesome, too.
Good people here.
Yeah, good people.
Definitely. All right, guys. Well, this is Dr. Drummer. We're going to wrap up another Harmony Health Hour. It's Friday night, 4th of July weekend, so if you're in America, remember your freedom, baby. Freedom means Jackalope Radio, we got a big lineup for you the rest of the night. This is Dr. Drumright, the Harmony Health Hour, signing off, man. We'll catch you next week.
Fazenda Brazilian Grill.
Fazenda Brazilian Grill serves from scratch Brazilian cuisine at a fraction of the cost of other Brazilian restaurants. Fazenda offers 14 different cold salads and 16 hot dishes daily on our hot and cold bar, with 7 different cuts of meat grilled on our wood fire rotisserie grill in a casual setting. Fazenda Brazilian Grill, Kansas City's only comida por quilo restaurant.
Fazenda Brazilian Grill, located just northeast of the I-29 highway and Berry Road intersections in the Boardwalk Shopping Center.